Why people visit the monastery. We spoke about that a little bit. And we said people visit the monastery because they want to grow spiritually. They want to reveal the divinity that's within them. They want to be the master that they are. And that's not easy. That's not easy to be the master you are, because when you're the master you are, you don't remember that you weren't a master. You don't remember that you have made any steps or strides. And when you are a master, I'm sorry to say this to you, but when you're a master, you don't even remember you had a family. And you don't care. Because you're living in your bliss. You're living in your ownness. All of these other things that we've played up to now are just wonderful illusions that we have experienced. Always take it and set it down yourself then. These are wonderful illusions that we have, and they're illusions that leave us at peace. Now, Ellen just received the toothpicks from Garrett, and then she waved her hand at him as much as to say, get lost, keep your damn toothpicks. I don't want your toothpicks. I've got enough toothpicks. And one of the rules here at the monastery is that when you receive something, you take it, and if it has gone its cycle, then you may set it down. You don't have to. You may set it down. And so Ellen should take them and then set them down if she wants. And then John, who sees them being put before him, if he wants one, takes it, and then he passes it on. If he doesn't want one, then he just leaves it there because it's already been around several times. Right, John? Right. So these things sound picky, and they sound sensitive. But after you leave the monastery, after you have found your bliss, after you have addressed it and learned self-discipline and these other things, if indeed you did learn them, and it's dubious that you will learn them, because if you're thinking about after the monastery while you're still in the monastery, then you haven't learned anything. It's just like saying, let's see now. I'm going to learn mathematics so I can become a mathematician. Now, what is it like to be a mathematician? You don't even know what it's like to say 2 times 2 is 4. And then 2 times 4 is 8, and 2 times 8 is 16. You don't even know trigonometry and all these other good things in mathematics. And you think you're going to be a mathematician. And what is a mathematician? A mathematician's nothing. A mathematician's nothing. A master is nothing. All these things are nothing, but you know what they are? They are practitioners of what they are nothing in. A master is a practitioner of being a master, right? A mathematician is a practitioner of being a mathematician. A mother is being a practitioner of being a mother. She may never have had a child. She may never have had any children in her family. She may have been an only child living on a desert island with her parents. Never saw another kid. But when one was born to her, she did what came naturally. She serviced the kid. You saw Blue Lagoon. In Blue Lagoon, this young couple who grew up in the wilderness by themselves on a desert island knew the basic things of life. They were about 10, 12 years old at the time they were there. But when it came time for the baby to be born, they didn't realize that the baby had to suckle on the breast of the woman to get the food. And they didn't know why the kid was crying, you know. They tried to give him their food, and the kid didn't eat their food. But they held the child to her breast, and pretty soon the child found the nipple and said, "Food! Wonderful food! My kind of food! Wonderful!" And he was all of a sudden very happy and very content. But it was sort of they made it as a trial and error sort of thing. I have a feeling that people might really know, because the primitive tribes know that, but of course they help each other. Perhaps the first woman who had a baby and had to figure it out by trial and error too. But she told her daughters and sons about it, and they told their daughters and sons about it, and passed that along the way. But who knows, maybe it was natural. Well, you see, what I'm saying to you, those things that are natural, we take so for granted. And the things that are unnatural, we don't take for granted. Now, what is unnatural? Well, is it unnatural to say, I'm God? No, it's quite natural. As a little child, you say it all the time. You're number one. It's your world, and everything is yours, yours, yours. And then you train yourself out of it to believe what society wants you to believe, that you're working in a society and that you should pay attention to what other people are doing, and you should be concerned about how other people are getting along, feed your neighbor, take care of your neighbor, take care of all these things, and forgetting all about being yourself. Now, just imagine if you grew up like Tarzan, perhaps, but if you grew up without parents, without family telling you limitations, and you were just self, 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 would you be a selfish self? Or would you be the kind of self that was always giving? Would you be the kind of self that if any little pet came along and you're eating a sandwich, you give him part of your sandwich? Why are you doing that? You're selfish! No, self is not selfish. Self is being yourself, which is love, which is sharing, which is giving, because the source is infinite within you. And you're just giving, giving, giving. Now, that's what you're learning at the monastery. I would like you to learn, at least. That's what you're learning, that you are doing all these things, Ingeborg.
Yes.
You're doing all these things because of one thing. You want to reveal the divinity that's within you. And the only way you reveal the divinity that's within you is if you know who you are. And you can't go on this framework of what you have had from your parents and your world, where you are not number one, where it's evil to say self, ego, and things like that. That's the most natural things in the world, most beautiful things in the world, ego and self. When you take care of yourself, then all in your world will live a happy life. When you go out and you get yourself a carcass of a water buffalo and you cook him over the fire, you're not going to eat that whole thing yourself. You're going to invite the neighbors in. Hey, boy, party time, party time. And they all come in and eat the water buffalo and have a good time. And then when they get a water buffalo, they invite you because you're number one. And then you get another water buffalo. Hey, this water buffalo stuff is kind of fun. I can just get it, and the women like to cook it, so that's nice too. You know, I don't mind that at all. And so I love eating it. And so then every week or so, you go out and get a water buffalo. It lasts you for a whole week. All cooked nice and beautiful, and you share it, and you just have a good time. But you see, this is our naturalness of sharing and giving, not because they need it, not because they need it, or not because we need it, but because that's our nature. Our nature is to give. I buy things, and after I have them for a very short time, I share them with the group, I give them to the group, and the group doesn't even take them half the time. So I have all my goodies piled up over there waiting for someone to enjoy it. John says, try me. But truly, here we learn non-possession, that all the things that come to us are a joy, and we use them, and they're wonderful. Now, this is not my disc player and my clock and my microphone and my pencil and my stuff. It is ours. You say, well, then I want to use it. It is dedicated to receiving these talks. Now, if you want to make sure it's back here to receive these talks, you can use it all you want. But if one time it's not back here when it's supposed to receive these talks, then you haven't fulfilled your responsibility of making sure that it fulfills its responsibility. Now, it's not mine. I don't care. I can talk forever without being recorded, and it won't bother me at all. But it's kind of nice for others, perhaps, to listen to it and hear what we've said and hear about what we said. Now, what's going on in your mind? What have you learned at the monastery? When Anita goes visiting her parents and family, in a few days or weeks, what is it, 52 days? What's she going to do? Is she going to leave the monastery here? And the minute she steps out this door, she's going to put on her bozo suits and her dresses that are coming up to the middle of her waist and stuff like that. You know? Mm-hmm. You go to Las Vegas, and you see these girls walking around delivering drinks to the table, and you think, why bother to put anything on, you know? And they got their skirts up under their breasts, you know. It's silly. But it amuses a lot of people. But is that what we're going to do? Just immediately revert back to the brazen beings that we were at one time? Or are we going to express the divine beings that we've learned to be? And are we going to be happy to be the divine beings? Are we going to be so proud that we have learned these things and that we are peaceful with it? And when you sit down at your mother's table or you sit down at a friend's table and so forth, and they serve you something you don't want, you just say, thank you very much, and leave it sit right in front of you. And after the meal, it's still sitting there, and they'll say, oh, didn't you want it? No, I wanted it. Thank you very much. I'm just not eating it, you know, but I thank you very much. That's very thoughtful of you. I like having it sitting in front of me, too, just like you have it set in front of you, you know. You know what they did the other night? They served ice cream, chocolate ice cream. And there were 7 bowls of ice cream, more or less. And I ate mine. I love chocolate ice cream. And another bowl came, and another bowl came, and I ate them all. And they didn't mind. They didn't want them. So there it was, my bowls. And now, they can't have them back. They can have the empty bowl. But the ice cream is building a good fork down here. So, what are we learning? What are we learning here at the monastery? To be totally untouched. Now, this may surprise you and may come as a bit of a jolt, but what you see, you are. And if you look at me as a fat old pig, that's exactly what you are. If you look at me as a fantastic figure like John here, and a beautiful mind like John, and a graceful attitude like John, and an infectious personality that just claims you like John, you're pretty smart. You're pretty smart. Right, John? Mm-hmm. You're pretty smart. So, do that. Mm-hmm. Just see me however you wish to see yourself. And I don't mean wish, but however you are in yourself. If you are a beautiful, sensitive, caring person, you see me that way. And you don't see anything in the outer. Now, you don't know about this, but that's okay. What does crackle cree and crackle craw look like?
Alike,
but they're the craziest looking things you ever saw. They're puppets, hand puppets, and they're birds with long legs and purple and yellow and, you know, all sorts of crazy colors on it. And it's Christina in Switzerland there, her things. And so she had crackle cree and crackle craw, and they were always having a conversation with each other. They were always having very interesting talks, very fascinating things they were doing. But when you looked at crackle cree and crackle craw, did you see how silly they looked? Or did you see the personality of Christina coming through? Did you see her light coming through? Did you see who she is coming through? And what did she do with crackle cree and crackle craw? Anybody know? Yeah?
I think they moved to Switzerland.
No.
She wrote in her article.
She wrote her autobiography with Crackle Cree and Crackle Craw as her parents. And mm-hmm. she was Crackle Cree or Crackle Craw, whatever it was. But they were her parents. And they were teaching her how to fly from the nest and how to do all these good things. A charming, charming story. Do we have a copy of it? If we don't, we should get it from her. But and then make sure she gets us the latest editions. But it is super. And now, when you looked at Crackle Cree and Crackle Craw, or at least when you looked at Christina doing it, you didn't even notice that these were crazy-looking birds. You thought they were beautiful expressions of a beautiful person. And Stefan, he gets up there with Bernard, his little St. Bernard dog, this big monster on his arm, and he immediately changes his personality. He immediately becomes Bernard. And Bernard is a very gentle, caring person, a dog, who is sensitive and loving. Now, that's the kind of person that went on sabbatical a few months ago. St. Bernard, you know, Bernard went on sabbatical, not Stefan. Because when Stefan tells me what he's doing, he's Bernard, with that lovely, sensitive, caring gentleness. And when he talks about the monastery and business, then he is Stefan again, crisp and demanding, you know. Yes, that's what they should do. Yes, that's what they have agreed to, you know. Stefan, stay, Bernard. But you see, that's the beautiful thing. When we leave the monastery for any purpose at all, to visit or to go off and live our own life, let us take with us the fact that we are number one, that we're perfect, that we're wonderful, we're desirable, we're fantastic, and that whatever we see out there is exactly what our emotions are at the moment. And if they're not what we like, instantly change them. Instantly put a new cause in motion and enjoy it. Now, that's just a little bit, but it's a good start. I like me, 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 I'm number one, I'm number one, I'm number one.